to the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny. So I should explain, that is the new name of the show. I'm not going to try to pull an Aunt Viv and just change it and not acknowledge anything that's happened. The new show name is the Mina Kimes Show. It's actually not the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny, but he is a megalomaniac, and he has been asking to be paid, and he's been asking to have his picture on it, and this was a concession to my dog. You could say I threw him a bone. Anyways, I am joined this week by my, who's struggling not to laugh, because of my hilarious jokes. I'm joined this week by my good friend, Danny Kelly. Hey, Danny, what's up?
What's going on, Mina?
Hey, Danny is a writer at The Ringer. You can find him on Ringer's, it's called The Ringer NFL Podcast, right? Just The Ringer NFL Podcast.
Yeah, I'm on the Ringer NFL Podcast feed, and I have a show called The Dantasy Podcast with my buddy Danny Heifetz. We do fantasy football, clearly. It's a really good pun.
It's almost as good as the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny. Danny, you might have heard, he was on the Ringer NFL pod with Robert Mays, who used to host the Grantland NFL pod with Bill Barnwell. You used to hear me on the Bill Barnwell show. It's all very incestuous. We're kind of like the two new young trophy wives who they, is that weird? Should I have not gone down? Was that really weird? Except we were friends before. Yes, in this analogy, you and I are the new trophy wives. Oh, is that, I guess trophy wife is sexist? I don't know. Anyways, it's 2018. I have no idea what to say anymore. But, Danny and I knew each other, which I think violates that trophy wives wouldn't have known each other beforehand, but we've known each other since I want to say it's definitely pre-Super Bowl, which is how I define my life, pre and post Seahawks Super Bowl.
Right. I think it was, I remember we were talking about the Seahawks in probably like 2011 or something like that. And that was before you were with ESPN even. And it was just
the Seahawks Tavares
Twitter.
Jackson years.
Absolutely.
That's how you know you're a real one.
Yeah. I mean, I guess some people would probably call that bandwagon a little bit because of the 2005 year, but whatever. That's neither here nor here.
That's true.
Neither here nor there.
Yeah. We're both lifelong fans, but that T-Jack year, that was the year of, maybe the year before, was, I always cite this as my test for like a real fan. If you watch the Brown Seahawks game where Charlie Whitehurst played quarterback,
and
final score was like
6-3.
6-3.
Or maybe 3-0. I can't remember.
I think it was 6-3. That's the worst football game I've ever seen in my life, and I watched the whole thing. And if you watch that game, then you're in for life, in my opinion. Remember when people used to want Charlie Whitehurst when there were calls for, like, oh, we got to see football?
That might
have
been me. I can't remember.
Listen, I'm the one who was tweeting Matt Flynn's playing itineraries when we were trying to sign him as a free agent in 2012. And I was like, he's in Miami right now. Go get your man. Win for Flynn. So there's shame to be passed around here. So anyways, long story short, yes, Danny and I have been Hawk friends for a long time. We used to do some when he was running Field Goals, which is SB Nation Seahawks blog. We did some podcasting together. You know, some really great high-tech podcasts. It's been a kind of a crazy week in Seahawks world, you know, with the passing of Paul Allen, the owner. Obviously, there's a ton to say there. I think for the purpose of this podcast, the most significant thing is that Paul Allen played a significant role in keeping football in Seattle, why the team stayed. And so we're going to talk about the Seahawks in lieu of the Thursday night game. I know you guys really want Cardinals Broncos talk. but the game is, I'm not sure what the football term is, so I'm just going to say, but so, instead of that at the end, I think we're just going to talk about the Seahawks for a while. But as always, I have picked a few games I want to talk about, and yeah, so we're going to go through those. We'll do a mailbag, which I am tentatively calling Lenny for Your Thoughts in the middle of the show, answering some of the questions you left in my ratings and reviews. So let's get cooking. Hit it, Jay.
Titans versus Chargers.
All right. So, Danny, speaking of, you know, painful football games to watch, that 6-3 Seahawks Browns masterpiece, actually went back because I saw the stat that Mariota had been sacked 11 times. He is the first player since Guido Merkins, which is an incredible name, to be sacked over 10 times with 10 or fewer completions since then. That was 1987. I thought it was a typo, like when I saw the statistics. So I went back and I actually forced myself to watch the Titans offense in that wow. Ravens game. I know. And it was like, have you ever seen Black Swan?
I have not. No.
So Black Swan is a horrifying, disgusting movie. And I guess it's a good movie. I don't know. But I, at least two-thirds of the movie, I had to cover my eyes. And that's what it was like watching the Titans offense. So can you explain?
That's like
what
The Ring for me.
Oh, you think I would watch The Ring? I can't even watch The Ring trailer. When that used to come on the TV, I would run out of the room.
Okay, all right, we're on the same page.
Yeah, I don't do that. So let's talk about the Titans offense. I know this is mostly we're talking about this game because you and I want to talk about the Chargers, and we're big Chargers. We're big Phillip Rivers fans, I feel like.
Yeah.
But before we get to dessert, the vegetables, like what do you make of the 11 sacks? How much of that is Mariota? How is it time to like abandon hope on him, on the Titans offense? What is wrong with this team?
The weird thing was, they actually only gave up, I think, 9 sacks in the previous 5 games.
Yes.
They have a really good, pair of tackles, Jack Conklin and Taylor Lewan. And so it was kind of weird. It was like kind of came out of nowhere. Obviously the Ravens are really good defense and we'll get into that. But, it was just kind of strange. I think it was a combination of everything. It was Mariota. I always say Mariota, Mariota holding onto the ball for a little too long. I'm trying to break myself of that habit, but I can't do it.
Do you think if he was better, people would have learned how to say his name by now? Like, do you think it's the fact that we can't get a read on Marcus Mariota is contributing to people not learning how to say his name right?
Yes, I think so. I mean, like, look at the season he had last year, 13 touchdowns, 15 picks. And I was really, I had really high hopes for him this season, you know, with Matt LaFleur coming in and changing the offense. I like hated the smash mouth, the exotic smash mouth, which, I mean, for as much as we made fun of it and for much as I hated it, at least there was a plan. Like, what is, and I think Josh Norris was tweeting about this, like, we're 6 weeks in. What is the Titans' identity on offense? I have no idea, like, what they are or what they want to be.
Well, can you name more than one Titans wide receiver? You probably can.
I'm looking at the roster right now. That's the problem, though, is like, I think, you know, Corey Davis is still learning and trying to, you know, develop. Taywan Taylor, Tajay Sharp. There's a guy named Cameron Batson who I've never heard of. Yeah, so they don't have a lot of depth. They don't have a lot of experience. Rashard Matthews decided that he didn't want to be on the team anymore.
Which, fair, watching this game. Fair.
Right. Delanie Walker got hurt. It's just, I think, number one, they lack elite players in the skill position group, or even established players in skill position groups. Their running backs are good, but they just can't run the ball this year. And, I mean, I just think they're still trying to install that offense, and it's going to take some time. It looks pretty crappy in the preseason, and then I got my hopes up a couple games ago when Mariota had a couple really big throws down the field and looked kind of good and started running a little. But then it all fell apart last week. And so I just think it's going to be a struggle to get it all together and to build that offense, because number one, like, Mariota is still struggling. And number two, they just, I don't know if they have the talent right now.
Right. And it's one of those things where we're constantly saying, well, can we evaluate Marcus Mariota? Right. Because before we would blame the scheme for being, you know, the exotic smash mouth and being uninventive and not playing to his skill set. And then now we're looking at the skill players and we're asking, well, are they good enough? He clearly doesn't trust them, by the way, because when I went back and watched all of those sacks, which again, it's really, really hard to watch. According to Next Gen Stats, the average time of them was 4.2 seconds after the snap. So, when you get to 4.2 seconds after this, so that's not on the offensive line. I mean, some of them were, but a lot of them were on Mariota. And it was curious because, you know, he's been in the NFL for a while right now, and watching that game, it looked like a guy, like a rookie to me. Like, he was so clearly confused. And the Ravens, who we're going to talk about later, we're going to talk about the Saints-Ravens game and that defense, which has been phenomenal. But they were really just bringing literally everything. Every single player got a chance at him.
Right.
And he had no idea, you know, he could not anticipate where the pressure was coming from on at least half of those sacks, right? And he was not able to diagnose. Yeah, it was just a total nightmare for him. And again, you know, the performance, this offensive line, they have some injuries and they're not perfect, but they're pretty good. And as you mentioned earlier, they've been good. And so I tend to blame him a little bit more, except for the fact that, as you also mentioned, they couldn't get the run game going either. Henry and Lewis did nothing, which ostensibly should be the identity of this offense. I was excited for the season for the same reason you were. The adding Matt LaFleur, you had Mike Vrabel saying stuff like, we're going to start doing, you know, college principles, the thing Marcus Mariota is good at, and I haven't really seen a lot of that. There's not a lot to be excited about with this team, and it is concerning because, you know, as with Winston, who we've talked about, they're going to have to make a choice on what to do with Mariota soon. And I don't know. Like, what would you do if you were the Titans and the season ended right now with Marcus Mariota? It's really difficult.
That's super tough. I mean, and I did a deep dive on Mariota last year when he was struggling a lot. And I kind of came to the conclusion that it was a lot of scheme related. Like he was being let down by the scheme. I just think they didn't design a system that really maximized what he was good at. Like, he was the NFL's best play action passer. I just rail on play action all the time because I'm obsessed with it, but he was the NFL's best play action passer, and they ran play action like 12th or 13th most in the NFL. And in the playoffs when they lost to the Patriots, they ran literally like 2 play action plays. And I was just like, man, what are they doing with him? You know? But at the same time, you know, if you watch his tape from last year, there are throws where he literally just throws it to the defense and there's nobody around. It's like, what were you seeing there? And so it's a little bit of both. I mean, I think I'm not necessarily panicking about him yet because we've seen in the NFL, like week to week, so much weird stuff happens. It's like 1 week a team looks terrible, just can't do anything. And the next week they kind of figure it out. And it's just a lot of it is matchup dependent and, you know, all that. So I'm not necessarily panicking, and I think it was always going to take a little bit of time for LaFleur to come in and completely change the offense. But yeah, I mean, it's concerning because not just because the scheme is taking a while, but because Mariota had such a bad season last year. It's like, are you worried that he's kind of broken at this point?
I remember you're talking about him, you know, throwing it right at defenders. And I remember that Skycan game, maybe that was 2 years ago, but there was a Skycan game where he threw like 4 picks and it made it look so much worse because you saw it for the field from his standpoint and he was literally throwing to defenders. Whereas at least, you know, overhead, you can say, well, maybe he didn't know, you know, the guy jumped the roof. Nope. He was just throwing it to the guys.
What's your take on the overhead cam, by the way?
I hate it. I think Skycam is fun I think it's fun if you don't care about the outcome of the game, but, and this, I think they did it for a Seahawks game, and that's when I was like, this sucks, because you can't see down a distance, so it's very cinematic, but if you actually really are invested in the game, it's not fun. I want to use play action as a segue to talk about our favorite non-Russell Wilson quarterback in the NFL.
You and I
have a shared affinity for one Philip Rivers, who, Danny, his passer rating on play action is 158.3 this year.
Is that perfect? Yeah.
That's perfect.
He's been outstanding.
So talk to me about Philip Rivers. Let me just throw this out. Philip Rivers MVP. How you feeling?
Well, I think obviously the Chargers have to not completely implode for that to happen, which I don't know how confident I am in that yet, but I mean, yeah, he's been playing, I think, you know, I don't know, you can go back to a few years ago when he was really lighting it up, but over the last few years, he's playing the best football, you know, over the last few years. I think the way that I would describe it is he's in complete command of that offense. He's playing under control, which has not always been his strong suit. You know, he's kind of, over the years, has been prone to throwing, like, terrible picks every now and then and having meltdowns and things like that. This year, he just looks completely calm. You know, completely in control. That offense is working for him really, really well. You know, he's third in touchdowns, 15, third in yards per attempt, 8.8. Second in pass rating, 115.1. The big thing that I've noticed about him over the last few years is he's really cut down on sacks he's taken. Last year, actually led the NFL in sack rate. In this season, he's fourth in that. He's only given up 7 sacks this season. So, those, you know, sacks are just drive-killing things. And so, he's really cut down on that. His pace right now, 4,500 yards, 40 touchdowns, 8 interceptions. I mean, I don't know if it's good enough for the MVP when we've got, you know, like Goff and Mahomes kind of just blowing everything out of the water, but he's playing like an MVP. I'll put it that way. Like, he is, you know, carrying that offense. They're the third best offense in the NFL behind the two juggernauts. And, you know, that's kind of flying under the radar because of what the Rams and the Chiefs are doing. But, I mean, they're the third best offense.
So the one hope I guess I would have for his MVP campaign, and it would be if the team doesn't implode, as you said. And I think this team is interesting. They're very different from sort of the Chiefs and the Patriots and some of those juggernaut offenses in that they're balanced or they're getting more balanced. I tweeted this. I thought they might be the most balanced team. I think the Rams are pretty balanced too. So, you know, and they're going to get more balanced when Tlaib comes back and Marcus Peters figures out whatever the heck's going on with him. But the Chargers defense, to me, going into the season was a top five talent-wise unit, right? Yep. And I loved the Derwin James pick. He's been awesome. Then, of course, the inevitable Chargers injuries happen. Joey Bosa gets hurt. You know, and so they started really slow and obviously had a couple of difficult matchups. But you're starting to see them return to form. They're still just 13th in sack ratio, but the third in opposing QBR right now. And one thing that was interesting to me in the Browns game where they really got after Mayfield, and that is different compared to sort of the first few games of the season, is that they found ways to generate pressure with Joey Bosa not in the game, right? Because I think when he was there, it's like, okay, you got Melvin Ingram and you got Joey Bosa and you just line him up and let him go to town. But when Bosa's not there, they can't just lean on the front four to generate pressure, right? So in this Browns game, they really bothered Mayfield and they were doing much more, you know, like zone blitzes and stunts. And I think Bosa's obviously coming back, but it was good to see them adjust. Damian Square, the lineman who played in, you know, he subbed in for Bosa, was very good well. So, which I think, again, once he comes back, having that depth will be useful. And I'm like, am I wrong to be optimistic about this defense potentially, you know, climbing into the top five?
Yeah, I mean, you can kind of look at it like a little bit of a, if they can get through this Bosa, you know, era without him, and then he can come back and have fresh legs and be, you know, not have to do the rigors of a full season, that could be pretty big because Bosa's obviously a dominant player. He's like a defensive player of the year type player. I think, you know, the Derwin James thing is, how is that still flying under the radar, how good he's been? Because, I mean, he
one pick away,
everything.
Seattle was. One pick away.
Yeah, this is just so depressing.
Chilling. Oh, so
but yeah, I mean, he's been all over the place. Yeah, oh, good. Yeah, that's good.
We'll get to that.
yeah, it's depressing. But yeah, so I think, you know, like you said, they're dialing up other ways to get pressure. Derwin James has been a big part of that. He's kind of been all over the field for them. I can't remember the stat I saw, if it was defeats. I want to say someone was tweeting about defeats, which is essentially like a catch-all term for, you know, sacks, interceptions, basically plays where you stop the offense. He's like one of the top guys in that stat this year. He's just everywhere. Just do-it-all player, which is exactly what he was in college and which is exactly what everyone thought he would be in the NFL. For some reason, he fell. But yeah, so I think, you know, he's been a big kind of add to that defense. And they were already good. They're pretty good again. Obviously, losing Bosa is big. But, you know, if they can kind of just weather the storm now and then get to the second half of the season, that's where, you know, last year I think they won like 6 out of 7 to finish the season. So they were really hot in the second half of the year. If they can do that again, I mean, they could be one of the top teams in the AFC this year.
Yeah, and I just think they're, you don't see a lot of balance in the entire league, but certainly in that conference.
Not this year especially.
Yeah.
I think
I'm on the Chargers side train.
The big thing that I think about the Chargers that has changed a lot this year is the way that they're using Melvin Gordon, or not necessarily the way they're using him, but just what Melvin Gordon has done. He looks Todd Gurley-esque. I mean, I'm not going to say he's Todd Gurley because Gurley is in a different stratosphere than just about every other running back, but the way that they're using him in terms of he's a, you know, a force on the ground, they're using him in the screen game, and he's actually on pace right now for 80 catches, 744 yards, and 8 touchdowns as a receiver. So he's just kind of all over the place for them. He's their sort of de facto number two receiver. He's almost like taken the role of Hunter Henry, not that they're running the same routes, but he's like that dump off guy over the middle that can pick up yards after the catch. You know, Rivers obviously trusts him a bunch. I love Eckler too. Like, I just think they have such a good offense. Everything they do is so exciting. It's actually, in some ways, I noticed when I was watching them last week, it's a little bit similar to what the Rams do in the sense that they use a lot of jet sweep motion before the snap. We saw last week, actually, Keenan Allen had like 50-something yards on jet sweeps. And they do these tight split formations where they can spread the whole field and run routes towards the outside and then come back inside. Play action, obviously Rivers is doing good on play action. So there's just they're obviously not the Rams, a different scheme, but they're doing a lot of the same concepts to kind of just like confuse defenses. And it's really fun. The Chargers are flying under the radar, their offense anyway.
Yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned Hunter Henry, right? It's not like they haven't had the injury bug on offense as well with him and Travis Benjamin, but guys keep materializing on that offense. And so this game is in London, by the way, and I think I saw afterwards Philip Rivers saying they were staying in Cleveland before going to London. He was saying, I can't think of anything worse than losing and staying in Cleveland 4 or 5, which they didn't have to. So I think we're both pretty high on the Chargers. Certainly picking them for this game.
Knock on
All right,
wood.
Moving
Knock
on. On Jay?
Yeah.
Cutler? Hit it?
Vikings at Jets.
I got a question. All is right. that the same guy that does the running riot thing in Halo? Did you play Halo?
No. I don't know
really
who
curious.
Our Cutler
sounds,
is.
No. Just right. like, I want to look up his IMDb because it sounds, in the Halo game, there was like, running riot, and it sounds just like him.
Please keep that in. Okay, so I really want to talk about the Vikings Jets game. The Vikings, you know, I think there's a few teams that are kind of, I don't know if I would call them getting back on track or what, you know, teams, and certainly the Saints are a little bit that way as well, and we'll talk about later. But the Vikings, obviously, in particular, the defense, which is 26th in DVOA still. I don't think there's too much to be discussed with the offense right now. To me, you know, other than maybe you could debate whether is Adam Thielen the best wide receiver in the NFL. There's a case to be made at this point.
Yeah.
I think Kirk Cousins has been everything they've asked for, in my opinion, Danny. Did you see he was dancing? And
oh, God.
Did you see his inspirational speech?
No, I didn't. I saw, like, I didn't listen to it, no. Can you do a recreation of it?
Well, it hits too close to home for me because it's so corny, and he definitely worked on it the night before, and I am that person. Like, if I was an NFL quarterback, I would definitely write down, like, some practice, some speech, some beats, maybe not verbatim. I wouldn't memorize it, but I would come up with some lines the night before. Kirk Cousins, I think he's been just really, really good. He's ranks in pretty much the top 10 in every matchup. We don't need to run down his stats, but one thing that stood out to me is obviously this Vikings offensive line is not a strength, and he has been pretty good under pressure, which has been an issue with him in the past, and maybe last year behind Washington prepared him for this, but, clearly having the run game work as it did last week really alleviate some of that pressure off of him.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I just think he's phenomenal. Well, maybe that's a little bit much. The Rivers hype trickled into my cousin's talk, but he's been very good.
He's been really good. And like you said, I mean, their offensive line has been terrible. I actually looked this up. Pro Football Focus, they've given up 106 pressures this year, which is easily the worst. And they have no run game, or at least they haven't before last week. And so, I mean, he's been basically carrying the offense. And
yeah,
I mean, obviously with Thielen and Diggs, he's got two of the best receivers, but you know, you got to get those guys the football, and he's done a really good job of that. I mean, I just think he's been really good. Like, he, for whatever reason, he's always going to be Kirk Cousins to people. And I say Kurt Cousins because people still don't know his name. You know, like, he's just going to be one of those guys that people overlook, I think, no matter what kind of stats he puts up, because honestly, he's put up, you know, last year, not so much necessarily, but he's put up elite numbers over like last 4 years. And so,
yeah,
it's just kind of weird. You know, it's one of those things. He's not like physically gifted kind of guy, or he doesn't like look the part maybe, or I guess he does kind of look the part. He's like,
wow, stereotypes much? Stereotypes?
He looks like the Team America guy. I can't remember his name.
He really does.
You know,
he's got, well,
the Team America.
No. Okay. So here's the thing with Kirk Cousins. So just before we move on, and I've complimented him a bunch. He looks completely normal until he smiles. And then your opinion on him totally changes. Yeah, it's shocking.
Then you get the uncanny valley, right? It's like,
yes, it's so upsetting. if he just has his mouth closed, he looks fine and cool. The defense, so anyways, the defense has been the issue. You know, I mentioned they're 26 in DVOA, and it's been pretty perplexing. the very first week after their first loss, I think Dom, or maybe it was whenever we started this podcast, but after they were, I think it was after the Bills game, actually, Dominique and I were talking about everything that had gone wrong for them. And Dominique Foxworth, my friend, and he suggested that, you know, maybe it had to do with the absence of a pass rush was exposing the secondary. And I think that's borne true. And what you saw in the last game, they sacked, they just played Arizona and, you know, not the best offensive line or best offense, but they sacked Rosen four times. And you, again, it's similar to the Chargers to me, Danny, and, you know, obviously Everson Griffin hasn't been there. And then you're seeing them starting to figure out ways to generate pressure in his absence. Daniel Hunter, is it, it's Danielle, right?
I always Danielle.
Mess up his name. Danielle.
Danielle,
duh!
I think.
Duh! So confusing.
It's
Danielle Hunter.
Yeah.
As a Danny, as a Daniel, presumably, how do you feel about Danielle? How do you feel about that spelling?
I think it's confusing. It's confusing. It's like Kristen Michael, which is spelled Christine. It's like I still screw it up, but yeah, I don't know.
That is, you gotta anticipate that people are gonna mess that up if your name is spelled that
way. Yeah, yeah.
They had a couple of,
he has like six sacks this year or something like that.
Yeah. And he had two in this game, and they, a couple of DBs, get sacks as well. Harrison Smith and Mackenzie Alexander. So I think you're seeing them sort of slowly adjusting. And obviously Sheldon Richardson has been very good in the run defense, but I think you're seeing them slowly adjusting to Everson Griffin's absence. That is one of the explanations I have for sort of the slow curve of this defense. Which obviously was elite last year and has looked anything but. Do you think there's anything else that's factoring in why they were so bad at the beginning of the season?
Well, you kind of stole my answer. I was going to say, like, they just haven't gotten as much pressure, I think, from the front four as maybe they used to, or they're used to, and so they've had to dial up more exotic stuff, which worked against the one of the worst offenses in the NFL, you know, in Arizona. But we'll see. I think that they're – my general, like, when you ask – is that the defense back? I think they're fine. I think they're going to be fine. I think part of it is like, it's just really hard to play defense in the NFL this year, like just in general, because of all the rules and just the difference, you know, just differences over last year. I mean, the numbers are insane with league wide. It's like scoring is up several points. And so, it's just hard. It's just, there's a, I actually was thinking about this with regards to the Jaguars, who we'll talk about later, but, I think just defenses in general, especially like being elite in the NFL is such a, it's like an ecosystem and it's really fragile. It's a fragile ecosystem that's really hard to maintain because if you get one thing taken out of it, it can mess up everything down the line.
Like
I mean,
Griffin.
Like in Griffin, Griffin's an elite pass rusher. And if you take that out of what it had been just a, you know, well-oiled, like finely tuned instrument, you know,
I like the ecosystem. No, stick with the ecosystem.
Like lots of metaphors here, but yeah, the really fragile ecosystem thing, I think it's really true though, because I mean, if you just, if you take one thing out of it, it means other guys have to do things a little bit differently or be, you know, one step in the different direction or whatever. And so, I think we're just seeing that it's, you know, it's why regression happens. This was one of the most dominant defenses last year and, just really hard to maintain that. And so generally though, I think they'll be fine.
Yeah. I wish you could see my brain right now because I'm scrambling for thinking back through fourth grade, like biology science and trying to remember how ecosystems work and trying to think of an example. I remember it was like, it's why you should worry about endangered species, right? Because if like the spotted leopard disappears, then suddenly, you know, the bird that sits on the spotted leopard can no longer pick insects off of his fur or something. I don't know what I care about.
Exactly.
But I think that's a really apt analogy. And again, like with the Chargers, with the Vikings, you do, and it's no coincidence, by the way, that they both had elite pass rushers, which makes such a difference. Secondary's best friend. But I think, you know, the Jets are an interesting challenge for this offense because I have been really impressed by Sam Darnold over the last couple of weeks, Danny, especially because he played two entirely different games, right? So against, you know, he had those insane passes to Robbie Anderson against the Broncos, right? I don't know if you remember, he had a couple of like super explosive plays. And I know part of me was like, eh, that's kind of lucky, you know, and then, I mean, there were good throws or whatever. But then against the Colts, who have a cover two scheme, he was just kind of dinking and dunking, taking the underneath stuff, being really, I saw somewhere was the first Jets QB since Pennington, this was in 2007, to finish with an 80% completion rate on over 30 attempts. So that shows you what kind of game, which is crazy. So that shows you what kind of game he had. And then he had that, it was at the end of the first half, he led a 2-minute drill and then spiked the ball with 3 seconds left. And again, like I know it's a little bit infantilizing to praise that, but that's something that rookie quarterbacks struggle with, right? Clock management. They didn't have any timeouts and he did it perfectly. And so I thought what a great game to show his maturation as a quarterback. The fact that, you know, it was a different kind of offense and that he did have excellent decision making. I think he threw one terrible pick, but I don't know. I'm very encouraged by what I've seen from him so far.
You know, so, you know, the line from Super Troopers where he's like, "That little guy? Oh, don't worry about that little guy." When he's shooting, they go shooting and he like misses one like in the shoulder. Everything else is right in the head. That was like that throw. Like, what the hell was that throw? Otherwise, everything was fine. But I mean, that little guy, don't worry about that little guy.
We don't even think about it that way. Yeah, it was really bad.
I actually watched, I'm writing about Darnold today. So I went and before the show, I rewatched this last game. The 2-minute drill was what stood out to me too, because I think, you know, for a young quarterback, sometimes a 2-minute drill is good because it simplifies things. You just kind of get to line. But at the same time, you have to do all that clock management stuff. You have to get guys lined up, and in pro systems, obviously getting guys lined up is kind of tough because I think they run the West Coast system. And so the play calls are really complex and all that stuff. And so anyways, it was impressive. I was impressed with how he threw over the middle of the field. He was really confident on third downs. He had a couple of third down plays, like slants, one to Curse and one to maybe Anderson. I can't remember, that I thought looked like he was just confident throwing from the pocket. He's one of those guys that when he throws, like half the time, it looks like he's panicking, but at the same time, it gets to where it needs to be. Like, I think he needs to clean up his mechanics a lot. Like, he just throws off balance and his feet are like really not where they need to be and all that. But like, that's stuff that you learn, I think. And I think he can clean it up. I was actually, so before last week when he made those two big throws to Robbie Anderson, I actually looked up the stats. He'd thrown 20 plus yards down the field 13% of the time, which is actually 11th in the NFL, but he'd only completed three. He'd only completed three passes over 20 yards before that. So essentially the deep game in the first, I think, 4 weeks of the season was not a part of his repertoire. Like, it just wasn't there. And I think getting those two big plays kind of opened things up. They got a couple more chunk plays in this last game. One of them was just based on like a scheme. It was they ran like a package play, like a fake screen to the left, and then went deep when the three defenders bit on the screen. But I mean, he's throwing downfield with more confidence. I think overall, like, you have to feel good about where he is. He looks like a rookie sometimes, but you know, I like what he's done so far.
Yeah, I really liked him as a prospect, and I think, you know, again, there's been highs and lows, but he seems to be headed in the right direction. Noah Nunwa, Quincy Nunwa's out for, I think, at least 3 weeks. That's going to hurt. So, you know, and obviously everything we're describing was against the Colts defense, which is a giant caveat to all the praise.
Right.
Before we get to the next game, as always, I am going to take 10 questions from the reviews. If you leave a question or review, I will answer it unless it's weird. Okay. Speaking of caveats. So I'm just going to drill through these because we're in a little bit of a hurry as always. So first question. Oh, yes. I'm calling this Lenny for your thoughts, but I haven't asked Jay Cutler to do a read for me yet, but you know, maybe we'll ask him to do that. Okay. Straily Strong asks, what sports moment made you cry? I'm going to go for a non-Seattle sports since this is going to be about to get very Seattle. One thing that comes to mind for me was, do you remember D. Gordon hitting the homer after Jose Fernandez passed away? That was,
I do.
I want to say last year. Most sports not asked. If you're marooned on a desert island, you bring one ESPN personality. Besides Lewis Riddick, who are you bringing? I'm going to go with Dominique. Don't tell him that I said that, but he's really calm and good in like situation. And I'm in a constant state of panic. So he's like a very good person to have in emergencies. Mr. Billy Bob Joe Random, why are you a Mariners fan? Because I hate myself. TJ 101 asks, tteokbokki or tacos al pastor? Gotta go with tteokbokki. Stay true to my Korean roots. Amos. Which two new, ooh, this is, Danny, you should weigh in on this one. Which two new Seahawks this year are important pieces going forward? So I don't, this year, like, in reality, the most important pieces are the signings of Bradley McDougal and Justin Coleman, probably. From the draft, I guess. Rashim Green has been hurt, maybe.
Yeah. I was going to say Trey Flowers.
Well, who was drafted last year, right? Fourth round?
Or... No, he's a rookie.
He's a rookie? Really? I forgot. Wow.
Yeah, he's starting right off the bat. So he could be good.
He was pretty good.
You're not going to say Rashad Penny?
Moving on. DJ Tico B. Is Drew Brees the most underrated quarterback of his year? Okay. So I normally with you, but I think the Drew Brees underrated thing has blown. It's become like the Tom Brady has a chip on his shoulder or Jimmy Graham used to play basketball. Like, we get it. And if you say someone's underrated so often, then they're no longer underrated. So I'm going to go with Philip Rivers. BJ Slater, what made Troy Aikman so special? His accuracy, I guess. Top of the morning, could any sports figure inspire you to write a book? Sure. Not something I have encountered yet. Corny Son, it's quite a name. What is your dog's favorite treat? Anything that I am eating on the table? Last question. Skinny Mikey, my girlfriend doesn't like corn. Can I trust her? That's a great question. So I would follow by saying corn is my favorite food, Danny. So shout out to Skinny Mikey for knowing that. So if it's all if it's one corn, like just corn on the cob, that's fine. But I would say if it's all forms of corn, like cream corn, elote with cotija cheese, cornbread, that's weird, right? That's widespread corn discrimination.
Wow.
All right.
I didn't know the corn fact. That's good to know.
Do you like corn?
I think it's fine. I don't go out of my way to eat corn necessarily.
All right, let's get to the next game, Jay.
Texans at Jaguars.
All right, so Danny, you kind of alluded earlier to the Jaguars defense, which is,
yeah.
Did you watch the whole Cowboys game?
Not like in the all 22 or anything, but yeah, I watched it.
It's crazy, by the way, that even after getting completely destroyed by Dak Prescott, they're still third in DVOA, which again sort of speaks, it's still early in the season and the opponent adjustments are still shaking out, but it, I think, really speaks to the lack of defense in the NFL. And we'll talk about the Ravens soon, a team that whose defense has not had one of the few good defenses that hasn't had like a terrible game yet, right?
Yeah.
But the Cowboys game was really rough. I almost tweeted Daxonville, but then I did the thing where you check to see who else is making the joke, and the first thing that came up was that Jerry Jones had said that, which I've never felt that degree of shame in my life than when I almost, I know. It's like when someone terrible likes your joke and you start questioning everything about yourself.
there's that Onion article. It's like someone you hate made a good point. Damn it.
I don't hate Jerry Jones, but I certainly don't want to have the same sense of humor as him. And also, Daxonville is terrible. But he really just murdered them with his feet. I guess, you know, we were talking about the Chargers and the Vikings, and I think we pointed to, you know, Bosa and Everson Griffin and how that sort of disrupted the ecosystem of those defenses. But the Jags, they haven't had, you know, many massive injuries on defense. So what do you think, you know, this is two games in a row. Granted, one of them was against the Chiefs where they've had bad games. What do you think is there anything wrong with his defense, or is it just a two game stretch of, you know, badness?
I think there's no real simple answer to that. I looked into it a lot, you know, because I'm actually writing about that this week also. It's like the next two things I'm writing about. So I think generally I still think there's the ecosystem argument to be made. And honestly, they're probably just catching some variance. You know, they're basically regressing a little bit, which is what you could expect from a team that was absolutely absurd on defense last year. So like, they're not getting quite as much pressure with their front four this year as they did last year early on. Like, last year they had 55 sacks. This year they're on pace for 37. Last year they had 21 interceptions, which was probably highly related to what they were doing in the front end. Obviously they have great corners, but you know, pressure creates turnovers a lot of the time. They're only on pace for 8 interceptions this season, which is one of the lowest teams in the NFL so far. I mean, like, if you just look at Calais Campbell, who I think is awesome, but I mean, he's had just a marginal drop off this year. Last year through six games, he had 32 pressures. This year, 17 pressures. As a team, last year through six games, they had 81 pressures, 20 sacks. This year, 66 pressures, 10 sacks. So it's just kind of like this marginal regression in that sense, and it kind of disrupts the whole ecosystem, like I said. And so I think there's other things to it. The offense has been a problem. I think last year sort of
really. Yeah. But so you know, there have been games in the past where the offense is a problem. And earlier this year, they had that 9-6 game, right, versus the Titans, where the defense is still able to compensate for, despite the horrible field position that Blake Bortles puts them in and those sorts of things. Do you think it's just like the combination of that continued badness with the offense with these like slight regressions on defense?
Yeah, pretty much. So when you think about the Jaguars, when you think about their
stop. Can you say the name of the team again?
Damn it, I get this all the time. How do you say it? Jaguar?
Jaguars. Jaguars. It's not that hard.
Jaguars?
You're saying Jaguars.
I know. People get mad at me about this.
Oh, my God.
Jaguars? Jaguars?
Oh, my God.
Jaguars. It's a hard one to say.
God,
let's be honest.
What is wrong with you? Please continue,
Let me get
sorry.
Back to my point. Okay.
What was your point about the Jaguars?
The Jaguars. Okay, so Jacksonville, their identity last year, their kind of strategy was to get an early lead and then play strong defense and run the ball and kind of just play that ball control style of offense. And last year, they were fifth in first quarter points in the NFL, first in opponent first quarter points. So they'd lock people down, get a lead, and then basically just bleed the game out. This year, they're 28th in first quarter points, 11th in opponent first quarter points. Last year, they were 5th in offensive time of possession and 1st in first half time of possession. This year, they're 13th in offensive possession time of possession and 18th in first half time of possession. So, again, it's the ecosystem. It's all disrupted. Last year, they were 8th in first downs per game. This year, they're 23rd. So their offense.
So they were at least able, even though they were bad, they were keeping things on time a little bit and keeping the defense off the field. The defense, by the way, they've just been on. I was thinking that while watching the Kansas City game, Danny, they were just on the field way too much in the first half, and you had a feeling that was going to affect them. And I think your point is well taken, which is that basically, if your offense isn't good, your defense has to be perfect now. And this defense is not bad, but they're not perfect. You know, there are little things you can point to. When I was watching the Cowboys game, so the Jacksonville still runs, what is it, basically Gus Bradley's cover three, which Seahawks fans are very familiar with. And as much crap as we give Scott Linehan, he game planned perfectly for it. And again, as Seahawks fans, we know the type of routes that beat cover three. And they're the type of routes that end up with Cole Beasley streaking across the middle of the field while he's being chased by Tyler Patman, who is, you know, actually, that was one of the changes. They lost their slot corner. And so, you know, they targeted him and A.J. Bouye pretty heavily, and there was some miscommunication there, which is sometimes what happens if you don't execute cover three perfectly, right? If you don't execute the handoffs on routes and stuff. And little things like well-timed wheel routes can really take advantage of that. There have been, I know Jags fans, forget Jags fans. Jalen Ramsey told me he wants to play man more. So So, you know, and he thought they had the personnel to do it and was sort of frustrated with the cover three last year. So I'd be curious to see if there are any changes there. But yeah, it's, look, if there's one offensive line that should, this pass rush should get going against, it is Houston, their opponent this week.
Maybe
the worst offensive line in the NFL. Is that fair?
Yeah. Worst or second worst, if you count the Vikings, but yeah, I mean, they're up there.
How much of the defensive
talent?
It's not. It's not
bad.
Good.
They give him the second most pressure.
Oh, that's not good. Yeah, Watson. Deshaun Watson has been hit 66 times and sacked 25 times this season.
Yeesh.
So yeah, maybe you know it turns out that going into this year with Julian Davenport is the name, right? The left tackle that they've got now in place of Dwayne Brown.
He's still in. Yeah.
I think he got roasted on the Bills game, which they really should have lost. I mean, the Texans are so much worse than their record. But I guess I just want to ask you about, I think the defense has been pretty good and they're getting better, and obviously Watt's come back online. But yeah. This offense, like, how much of it is Deshaun Watson? How much of it is the line? How much of it is Bill O'Brien? Should he be in the hot seat? What do you make of the disaster it's been so far this season?
Well, it's kind of frustrating that they did it so much different than last year. Although I guess I kind of in theory, I understand it because they're not using Watson as a, it's kind of like the Cowboys thing. They're not using Watson on read option stuff as much, or at least they weren't early in the season. That was a huge part of their offense, frankly. And I mean, you know, we saw what happened when the Cowboys went back to it last week. It like unlocked their offense. Because you're giving defensive players impossible decisions to make, and Watson's really good in the open field. Now, that said, they're not really reaping the benefits of not doing the read option because Watson's getting clobbered on so many different plays anyway. It just seems like, I don't know, maybe they just do it anyway because he's getting clobbered anytime he scrambles.
What can you do?
Like you said, I don't know. And I think he, number one, I think part of it is on Watson in terms of, he just doesn't show the instinct to get down and slide when he should. I mean, there was a couple of games, I think two games ago, when he was trying to get into the end zone a couple of times. He's just like
the primetime game,
throwing his head at the defense or at the defense or whatever. And so it was just like, man, stop doing that. It's making me nervous. But obviously, I think part of it too is just you know, they don't have an offensive line. Bill O'Brien changed the offense, and it's like, you know, that's going to take some time to kind of get going. I think Watson's been generally pretty good, all things considered. I think, you know, his numbers aren't where they were last year, but no one should have expected that because it was non-sustainable. But I think he's been pretty good overall, and as long as he can stay healthy, which is kind of the big question.
When he's gotten in a rhythm, and there's been a couple games this year where you've seen that, he looks good to me. But
yeah,
it's like one of those things, and I always felt this way about Daryl Bevel, that people were too hard on him because of the challenge of game planning with an offensive line that's truly atrocious. Okay. And I remember, I think it was Matt Hasselbeck, name drop, who once told me that when you have a horrible offensive line, half the playbook goes out the window. Right. And I think you see that with this team. They get a lot of crap for how bad they are in the red zone, but it was against the Bills. I think it was in the fourth quarter. They had yet another horrible, you know, red zone possession. And it was, I mean, I don't know what they're supposed to do. I mean, there was a false start that moved them back, and then Davenport, the left tackle, just got completely blown up. And you can say things like, well, they should have more little screens and move the pocket around, and sure, but man, there's a certain point where if your offensive line is this bad, I really don't know what to do. And to me, that's more on management than it is on the coach, right? The fact that they didn't do anything to address this over the offseason, and it's just really hard to watch. So, like I said, if it was ever a game for the Jags front seven to feast and get back on track, it would be against this offensive line. Pray for Deshaun. All right, let's move on to one more game before we get to our Hawk Talk.
Yes.
Saints at Ravens.
All right, so this whole time, Danny, we've been talking about this trend in the NFL, and the trend is defenses are bad. Great trend. But the Ravens defense has been the exception in terms of consistency, right? They are averaging less than 13 points a game, which has never happened. I mean, it's 12.8 points per game. That's never, an NFL hasn't had a defense under 13 points a game since the 06 Ravens. Obviously it's week 6 or 7 or whatever. So, I don't expect that to continue. And this would certainly be the challenge for them against the Saints. But I guess just, I want to talk about this defense for a second. Like, what is it about them? Like, why do you think that they've been able to be so much more consistent than some of the other defenses in the NFL? And do you think they have a case to be the best defense in the NFL?
I think they've got the belt right now. Someone's going to have to take it from them, because especially sort of taking into account the incredible offensive explosion that we've seen this year, to be doing what they're doing, fewest points per game, 12.8, fewest yards per game, they're leading the NFL in sacks. 13 different Ravens have a sack. I saw that stat this morning. So it's not like one guy is dominating. It's really I don't know if this is like oversimplifying it, probably a little bit, but they're really, really talented almost everywhere on their defense.
Yes,
and
at every level,
Yeah, it's just that helps. They got two great safeties. They've got two really good corners. Third corner, their nickel corner is good. They've got a really strong offensive defensive line that can stop the run. They have solid edge rushers. You know, Suggs is still doing it. And they have a good scheme that's been pretty aggressive this year. They're blitzing and getting pressure from kind of everywhere. So, I mean, you know, just all the pieces together makes it really, really hard to play them. Obviously, they got good players in their linebacker core too. So, I don't know. I don't know what it is that how they're surviving in this new world of offense or whatever. But to me, they're the only team in the NFL that's really doing it consistently. I think I saw this too. They're the only NFL team that hasn't allowed a second half touchdown this year.
That's crazy. I think you really hit on a potential explanation. Again, this game will truly put this to the test, right? But which is, we talked about these defenses where you take out one piece and it kind of all falls apart and then they figure it out. And, you know, but this is a team that's been able to, I think they've been able to generate pressure from a diversity of players and points on the field.
Right.
You know, Weddle and CJ Mosley are the heart and spine of this defense. And Tony Jefferson, by the way, has been fantastic this year. So, but you're seeing guys emerge. Obviously, Za'Darius Smith had a huge game, but, Kenny Young on the inside, Patrick Onwuesor, I think I'm saying his name right, really jumped out to me. Marlon Humphrey, the young cornerback who had a really good season opposite, you know, Jimmy Smith, it has been really, really good. So we think of this defense as being a little bit older, and maybe because Suggs brings up the average age so much. But you are having these young players, I think, step up and sort of play a significant role in the defense. And it's really showing. And that's a credit to Don Martindale, the defensive coordinator. Do you know his nickname is Wink? I just learned that.
Yeah, recently. I like that. That's a good nickname.
It's such a good nickname. so, you know, it is like Jacksonville's defense has, it is flashier. Right, I think they have more talented players, but perhaps you could say that the Ravens' defense is more consistent across the board, if that's fair.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, like the Ravens can't just sit back and rush four every game. You know, I don't think.
Nope.
Whereas the Ravens kind of did that last year and a lot, and just were so locked down in the back end that they could just do that. But they bring pressure from everywhere. They just make things hard on the quarterback in terms of trying to diagnose everything. You know, it does. I think we should note that they've played the Bills, the Bengals. The Bengals are a solid offense. The Broncos.
Yeah.
I would say. The two good offenses they've played are the Steelers and Bengals. And sometimes you can't
offenses.
Make. They're good offenses, but at the same time, sometimes you can't really make that much out of division games because these teams know each other so well. And so I think you're right, though. This is a good litmus test because the Saints have – we were talking about the Chargers earlier. The Saints and the Chargers might be sort of vying for the third best offense in the NFL. And so I think it's going to be a real test because the Ravens haven't really faced an outside division good offense yet. And so this is going to be really fun to watch.
Yeah. And the Saints, I think, are in the same way, like in some ways, their offense is the inverse of the Ravens' defense. Well, that's not really true because they have superstars, but they'll kill you 1,000 different ways, right? It was funny in the Drew Brees, record game, which was just, I felt so bad for Washington because it's just like, you know, you're going to lose that game. And can you imagine being a Washington player being on the field and having to sit for like 20 minutes while Drew Brees gets his laminated certificate or whatever. But, you know, that was a game where it was Ingram's first game back and the fact that they used him so heavily was really interesting and surprising. Yeah. And I don't think that's going to be always the case going forward. I think they really like having balance between Ingram and Kamara, who was not really involved a ton in that game, but the Saints defense is just so multiple, and obviously Drew Brees, we talked about Philip Rivers, but he should be right up there as an MVP candidate this year, in my opinion. So this is just a really, really phenomenal. I mean, we talk about these matchups of like the Chiefs and the Patriots, but this is actually I guess it would have been the Chiefs and the Jags, but to me, this is a real strength on strength matchup. I picked the Saints, but the more we talk about it, Danny, the less good I feel about it. I don't know.
I think I lean Saints still. Do you have the line in front of you? Do you know who's favored?
The Ravens were favored by 2.5, but it's I think it's in Baltimore, really? Right? So that, you know, yeah.
That's part of it. I think, so maybe it's just bias because of recent events, but like great offenses tend to beat good defenses of late. And so maybe that's just where I'm leaning. But yeah, it does matter that where it is and all that. And but yeah, I think the Saints defense, or the Saints offense, I should say, is just kind of a buzzsaw. I mean, they can, like you said, they can run it on you. Ingram having Ingram come back, I think, gives them a little bit of the physicality that they had last year. Imagine the peak Cowboys teams, like their offensive line, their run game with Drew Brees. You know what I mean? Like, it's insane, like the balance that they have on offense. And so, they have an elite number one in Michael Thomas. Kamara is more than just a running back. He's like just a playmaker everywhere. Their receiver core is actually not like necessarily deep. I think obviously the big joke is that I love Ted Ginn. He hasn't been as good this year as he was last year.
They're not stacked, I think, in this, but it's, by the way, it's funny that you mentioned the offensive line, because I do think often we talk about weapons, we should probably put that first, and they've been phenomenal. But the Ravens offense lines, that was one thing that really jumped out to me about the Titans game. Like, I do not believe in Joe Flacco.
I'm not going to try and convince you either.
He had so much time. They really looked like a return to some of those Ravens offensive lines of like 3 or 4 years ago, you know, when Marshall did. So they look really, really good. And I think that is obviously really helping Flacco. All right. So as promised, Cutler didn't do a read for this because there's no game. But since we've got Danny here, and I've held back on talking too much about Seattle, and it is the bye week, so I thought it'd be a good time, Danny, to kind of take stock of where things are. There's been a bit of a turnaround recently. The offense has looked really good. But before I talk about the offense, I really want to talk about the defense, because that's almost been a bigger surprise, I think, given the injuries, given the loss of talent. This has been, I don't know, where are they in DVOA, like fourth or five now? This has been a top 10, top five, okay, wow, defense in the NFL. And what a credit to Pete Carroll, in my opinion, look, we've been frustrated with a lot of the decisions made by this franchise over the last year or a couple years or so. But what he's been able to do with this defense, keeping them playing at the level that they are despite the loss of talent, is really remarkable, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, they've got, especially with KJ Wright gone too. I mean, they lost Michael Bennett, Cliff Averill, Cam Chancellor, Earl Thomas, Richard Sherman. Jeez. And they're still, now, you know, there's obviously the caveat, they haven't really played that many good quarterbacks yet. The Rams were the one really good offense that they've played. So going back, they've played the Broncos, Bears, Cowboys, Cardinals, Rams, and Raiders. And so there's obviously a caveat with all of this. But I think they're way better than I expected by far, even with, you know, their relatively light schedule. I think Frank Clark has emerged as a potential star pass rusher for them, like the guy that they wanted him to be. Yeah. Their interior defensive line, I think, has been really solid. Like, we were all mad about Tom Johnson getting cut or whatever, but Jerron Reed has been really good. Puna Ford's playing a little bit. Shamar Stephen is playing well. And Naz Jones, and they've got like that interior rotation that's really solid. Even Quentin Jefferson has been playing like the big stand up or the big end on the strong side, and he's been solid too. So their defensive line has been way better than I thought it would. Not necessarily great, obviously, but considering just all their losses or whatever, I think, you know, it's really solid.
Yeah, I mean, and of course Bradley McDougald. You know, I mentioned earlier that the Coleman and McDougald signings were probably the biggest actions of the offseason. Bradley McDougald, the safety, has been a legitimate star. He's playing at a Pro Bowl level. Tedrick Thompson, So he's only started a couple games now, right, in Earl's absence. So I don't think we've seen enough to really, especially right. against the Raiders, who just don't count. They might be the worst team in the NFL, by the way. But anyways, he held up pretty good, though, against the Rams. He wasn't targeted very much. But sometimes with safeties, I find, like, it's very hard to evaluate their play in real time, right? And you got to go back and watch. And if they're not targeted, for sure. it's for a reason. And so that's been really promising and well. And obviously, when I praise Pete Carroll, that is what he does. He's a DB's coach. And the fact that he's been able to coach up Griffin and Flowers and McDougal and Thompson, like, that's the secondary right now, okay? Right. Most non-Seattle fans probably don't know any of, outside of Griffin, maybe, any of those guys. So what a credit to him. And it is funny. Is Tom Johnson even playing on Minnesota? I did complain a lot.
I don't
about
know.
That.
I haven't checked. Catching up. It just looked bad. Like there was some bad vibes going on with the Seahawks early on.
Yeah, and the way they handled that too, they thought he wouldn't get picked up or something. But yeah, Reed in particular was really, again, very disruptive in the Oakland game. And if he can generate some pressure from the inside, kind of like a Mebane style. Brandon Mebane used to be a defensive tackle in that role. That would be huge and obviously really helps unleash Clark.
Mingo has been on.
Yeah. True. I noticed him a couple times in the last game, and then obviously he was on special teams earlier in this year. So they do get KJ Wright back after the bye, I believe, right?
Hope so. It's getting closer anyway.
So the area of controversy with the Seahawks, the bigger area of controversy, and the thing that I think I'm still not in on him, but the last couple of games have been promising. The last three games, really. My Schadenfreude has dissipated a teeny bit. Brian Schottenheimer, Seahawks offensive coordinator, Seahawks fans have not been happy with that. I maintain, so there was a tweet going around, Danny, I think it was before the Rams game, that showed like how good Russell Wilson is on play action, and then was like, why don't the Seahawks use play action anymore? And then I think literally the next game, they used it more than they have ever in the last 5 years.
Yeah.
I think it was Warren Sharp, and I DM'd him and I said, do you think Schottenheimer saw your tweet? I'm convinced someone there, like, because it really has been a remarkable shift. What do you make of, like, are you encouraged by the last couple of games? Obviously, they're still really leaning heavily on the run. Seahawks run the ball more than any team in the NFL in terms of the run pass balance. As of this point, like, do you want to fire Schottenheimer still, or how do you feel about the Seahawks offense?
So, 2 weeks ago, before the Rams game, I absolutely wanted to fire him. I was like, this is stupid. They're wasting Russell Wilson. Like, they literally should. I got to the point where I'm like, if this is like the plan, what's the point of giving Wilson the next contract? Because they're just not, they're basically not doing what he's good at. Like, it's almost like they looked at what he's good at and then they did the opposite. It was, you know, like the Costanza or whatever. But then, like you said, they saw the tweets. No, I'm sure they did, because I know that Pete Carroll has always been big on play action. I mean, like during his, during the Seahawks kind of heyday, the 2012, 2013, 2014, 2015 seasons, they were always really, Wilson was always among the league leaders in play action percentage in terms of how often they ran it. It works together with what they want to do running. I do, there's the argument that you don't need to run to play action, which I think is true, because really what play action does is the offensive line gives the linebackers the wrong key. Like they're reading the offensive line. And then they're taking a one step wrong, and that just is all you need, really. So I don't think you need to run to do it, but I do think they work well together. And so I think the Seahawks sort of platonic ideal of what Pete Carroll wants them to be is, and I picture Russell Wilson at Wisconsin, basically run the hell out of the ball, smash into your opponents, and then throw it over their head, you know? And Wilson's a really good play-action passer. And we saw that against the Rams. Obviously, their defense couldn't stop the Rams because no one can, but, I mean, that's like a really, you know, distilled down version of it, but it's like run the hell out of the ball, play physical, and then throw it downfield, throw it over your head. That the explosives part of that is absolutely crucial. And if they can't get explosives, then I hate the offense. But if they can get explosives, I think that's, I mean, it's the old cliche. It's like you throw to score and run to win.
I like it.
Yeah. No, so, I don't know. Right now, I'm happy.
Well, so I was laughing when Danny mentioned that a good run game is not important to play action, because this is a debate, shall we say, or a theme of Seahawks Twitter over the last 6 months or so. Shout out to Ben Baldwin, has been questioning the utility of a good run game. Obviously, in the Seahawks drafted a running back in the first round, which I don't think anyone at this point can say is a good decision.
No.
And it's very interesting because they have been running the ball successfully during these wins, right? And Seahawks still have the number one, they run the ball more than the other team in the NFL in terms of run pass balance. However, if you look at the teams who run the ball more than passing, right? Or the Seahawks are like at 50. So the ones who are sort of in that top five,
right?
You see the Rams. Okay. And I think that's where this can be a little bit deceptive, because it's not as simple as, you know, who runs and who passes more. It's when you run and when you pass, right? Because another statistic that jumped out to me, so NFL Matchup, which is a great Twitter account, shared yards per carry on first down when running, and Seahawks had the worst. They were tied with Baltimore for the worst in the NFL. Meanwhile, the Rams, who run the ball a lot, had the fifth best. They had 5.6 yards per carry. And when you watch the Rams game, yes, a lot of their advantage running the ball is the fact that they have one of the best offensive lines in the NFL. Todd Gurley is incredible. But they don't force it. You don't see McVay running into eight-man boxes, right? They do run it a lot, but they... Yes, exactly. They're not... It's not like a philosophy. It's not like... they take what the defense gives them. And that's what's frustrating to me. That was what was frustrating to me about some of the language coming out of Schottenheimer going into the season. Oh, we're going to run it when they expect us to run, which I think, you know, that's a little bit unfair. But that's running the ball a lot and having a really good run game. It means running it smartly, if that makes sense. And the Rams run it smartly. And when you watch the games, they do run it a lot, but they don't run it in stupid situations. And that's where I'd like to see Seattle get to, Danny, with the run game. And that's where I come down on the run versus pass debate.
Yeah, no, I'm absolutely with you, and you're right, because the Rams, I saw this stat from NFL Next Gen Stats. They said Gurley has faced the fewest 8+ men boxes in NFL this year, and that's a huge part of his success. I mean, obviously he's an amazing runner, but I mean, they scheme it up, so he's getting the advantage of just facing lighter boxes. The other thing is, like, run pass balance is deceiving too, because the Rams have been winning so much. You run when you're winning, typically. Like, if you look at, like, I don't know if there's an exact measure on what a neutral situation is. I typically say first and second down, first three quarters, will score within one score, so score within 8 points. Mm. The Rams are sort of middling in their run pass balance right now. They're running 50%, they're passing 56% of the time in those situations. Seahawks right now, 43%. They're 1, 2, 3, 4. They're fifth fewest passes in neutral situations. So they're very relatively run heavy. And I mean, if you look at some of the offenses, Washington, Buffalo, Carolina, Dallas, and then Seattle. So it's like, that's their identity. Where I land, and this is really simplistic, but running is good if you do it well. Otherwise,
and smart.
Stop doing it so much.
Yeah. That's great.
Too simple, but.
I was happy with how they ran the ball. Like, I get very frustrated when we go run pass. But obviously they ran the ball a lot against the Raiders. And you know, the Raiders have a terrible run defense, right? So, opponent is also, like, if you're playing the Chiefs, run it a lot, right? And I thought the way they ran against the Rams
on the ground.
Yes. And the Rams, a team with a questionable run defense this season, I think another situation where it's smart to run. All right. Danny, I always finish by asking my guest 5 quick questions. It's called Dinks and Dunks.
Okay.
And now it's time for Dinks and Dunks. I'm getting paid for this, right?
Okay. Number one, is it lame to have donuts at a wedding instead of cake?
No, not at all. Donuts are delicious.
What? No. That is so annoying. People come and they want cake. Why? Ooh, we got donuts because nobody likes cake. People like cake.
People like cake? That's my question. Do people like cake? I think cake is overrated.
Yes, a lot of... This is terrible. Okay, all right. Off to a terrible start. Number 2. What is the ugliest breed of dog?
Chihuahuas. or some sort of whippet.
How would you say that? How dare you?
I'm just kidding. I knew that Lenny's a chihuahua.
You know Lenny is part chihuahua. He's part chihuahua.
Yeah, no, I'm just messing with you. I would say, no, are I was going to say like a whippet. What are those hairless dogs that are really ugly? That's like the easiest answer
yeah,
ever,
like,
but.
They always win the ugliest dog contest.
Pugs are pretty ugly.
Wow. People are not going to like that. I'm just going to let you hang on that one. All right.
Like
number three.
Ugly in a good way.
What is the defining trait of Seahawks Twitter?
Being miserable.
Because, well, is that every NFL Twitter? So every different NFL Twitters, I feel like, have different personality traits. I would say rant, like inexplicably hating Andrew Luck and Derek Carr.
Yeah, that's exactly what Seahawks Twitter is. I would say fighting the wrong battles, maybe. No, I'm just thinking of the
no,
Andrew
I love
Luck
that.
Carr thing. Maybe missing the forest for the trees. I don't know. I like a lot. Like Seahawks Twitter is very analytical, and I feel like
yes,
Seahawks Twitter gets a bad rap because, and it should sometimes. But at the same time, like I think they do elevate the conversation in a lot of areas that, like, you know, not just talking about cliches all the time, which is nice. So yeah,
true, true. And they have locked in on Schottenheimer. All right. On that note, number four: would you rather shave your head for a year or wear one action green item of clothing every day? That's the Seahawks neon green, for those who don't know. It's terrible.
I think I would shave my head. Seahawks action green is terrible. I don't have a lot of hair to begin with, so I could get away with it.
All right, last question. Record prediction for this season for Seattle.
For the Seahawks? I'm going with 8-8.
Yeah, I'm hoping
hoping for the best.
I'm going 8-8, too. The schedule's getting a little harder.
I will say, they're better than I thought they were going to be. Early on in the season, I had very, very low expectations. Like, after the first couple weeks, I was like, okay, they suck. But now I'm like, okay, they can compete. Like, this is a whole, like, Pete Carroll, you know, cliche, but they really are, like, a competitive team at the very least.
Well, Danny, better than we thought they would be is how I would also summarize this podcast. Thank you so much for joining me. Hopefully, we can have you on next time when the Seahawks are in the Super Bowl.
Absolutely.